It's 7:06. You're listening to 100.5 FM. Good morning. I'm Ray Richardson. Thanks for joining us. Very much appreciated. We're broadcasting live from the RowAutoGroup.com studio. Don't forget our Heart Doctor text line is 207-409-6172. You can find out more at HeartDoctor.com. Dede Richardson, David Jones in the house. Good morning, one and all.
Hello.
Good morning. Yeah, hey, I was listening to you on the way in. You know, this whole thing with the ballot, you know, investigation. I mean, they put men on the moon in 3 days, right? And they can't find out what happened with the ballots in 2 months.
I'm sure all the evidence is now gone.
Yeah.
So we won't know.
Well, there's an answer to what you just said. We wanted to put a man on the moon in 3 days. Mm-hmm. We don't want this answer to become public.
Amen. That's it.
Well, we do. They
well,
don't.
They don't.
They don't. They don't. Exactly right. Yeah. It's a shame. But, yeah, you know, talk about mismanagement. Crickets. What has she done that hasn't been mismanaged? I mean,
it's not the license plates that she shipped out to Canada instead of them being American.
And taking away my
Chickadee.
Yeah. I was like, come on.
I knew what you were talking about.
Man, it's all crazy.
It's
all
just
crazy.
Bizarre.
It's 7:07. Dr. Peter Earle is joining us. He's a senior economist with the American Institute for Economic Research. They are focused on economic freedom. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ray. Good morning, Dede. Good morning, David. How's everybody doing?
Oh, living the dream, man.
Yeah, we
living
are.
The dream.
We're doing good. Things are good. Things are very good. Hey, Doc, we got a lot of economic data that has been coming out since the shutdown has been over. Have you had time to begin to analyze it and kind of tell us what it means for today, but more importantly, what you think it'll mean as a pretense to 2026?
Sure. Yeah, I have taken a look at some of it. Nothing fell apart. Nothing really deteriorated while the shutdown was going on and those numbers weren't being collected. We're going to have a permanent hole in October 2025 for employment data and for inflation data. But from what we see, both from the numbers that we've gotten that we've received since then and from what we see in numbers that can be used to estimate those, things didn't deteriorate. Things aren't bad. Nothing was being hidden. That's a big one I hear all the time. Oh, this number must have been so bad that, you know, they were hiding it. No, nothing like that. A few things. First, economic growth is very resilient, and it's still going. Real GDP is above potential. We have consumer spending, which is still pretty high, supported by real wages. Inflation is down. Oil and gasoline prices are at their lowest in some time. And corporate balance sheets are still really healthy. That's the thing that I think is a lot of people watching the stock market, their 401ks, they're worried about valuations. You know, I mean, I can't say that stocks won't turn around tomorrow, and they've been shaky for the last couple of days. But, I mean, they've had a great run, and they're not supported by just hot air like they were in the, you know, late 1990s and to a certain extent in 2007, 2008. They have real low-cost debt, you know, and cash buffers, and then so companies look like they're doing well. On the other side, I would say, you know, the consumer cushion is thinning somewhat. Excess savings are kind of running down for a lot of houses. That happens at times. I mean, it's not something that really politics can do anything about. Debt dynamics, not good. You know, debt, too much debt, too many deficits. And housing is a structural drag. I mean, I know that, you know, David has forgotten more than I'll ever know about this, but we're going to eventually have to come up with a way of increasing supply and not just demand. So 50-year mortgages are one thing that can be done, but we need to get more houses built at the same time. So that's what I see right now.
Let me ask you this question. The Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta has estimated the GDP growth in the third quarter of 2025 is a fairly robust 3.9%. That comes on the second quarter of 3.1%. If those numbers are accurate, and that's based on available data as of December 1, according to the Federal Reserve in Atlanta, what do you think that means long term? I mean, that is an economy that is really beginning to hum.
Yep. I mean, mid to late 1980s and to a certain extent 1990s numbers. Those are great, great numbers. And all for the low, low price of simply, getting out of the way, not hampering people's ability to transact, that sort of thing. This is one of those times when I say 3.9 is amazing. Imagine what it would be without tariffs, but I'm not going to go there right now. Those are good numbers. Those are very good numbers, and it's something to be proud of. And I think it just goes to show, you know, this is happening basically in the 10th month, the 9th month that Trump is in office and this administration is in office. I mean, so anybody who says, oh, it takes 3-4 years to turn things around, it's simply not true. What you don't do is you don't add scaffolding of legislation and regulations, all that sort of thing. You remove them and let the economy grow on its own.
Yeah, David mentioned a few moments ago before we brought you on about getting to the moon in 3 days, and my response to that is we were able to do that because we wanted to. You know, Trump came in and said, and he said during the campaign, we don't need a new policy on the border, we just need a new president, and he was right, and he closed the border. I mean, we have seen trickle of people who, you know, they're still somewhat resilient trying to get over, but it's been, you know, a handful here and a handful there, not what we had. And again, it goes to this economic policy. So you have to have somebody who wanted to liberate the American people. And he did that for the working class with no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. And he did that in states. Well, our state isn't complying.
Not but, here in Maine.
But in places around the country that are complying, you know, Social Security recipients are not paying taxes. They're getting that that tax credit against whatever they would have to pay. So the net for them is zero. And the point here is that you can do things if you want to do them, and you can say you can't do things, but the truth is it's only because you don't want to do them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very true. And again, I mean, anybody who argues that you have to, like, you know, completely reinvent politics at every level to get the economy to grow is completely missing the point. It's too many interferences, too many measures that are keeping people from producing and creating and exchanging amongst themselves that keeps the economy from growing. You know, I mean, and I'll go a step further about the housing thing, and that is that, you know, a lot of the problems with housing, especially with the supply side, are not federal issues. There's state and county issues.
There you go.
You can build, how you can build. So those are somewhat out of the executive branch's hand anyway. But I mean, to the extent that they can, you know, if they start working on that, or if they provided inducements to changing those rules on building at the state and county level, that would be very productive as well.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. By the way, just as a contrast, Statistics Canada, which is the organization that typically reports their economic data, says that their GDP increased by 0.6%, not even one full percent, in the third quarter. Quite a contrast to the American growth, if in fact these numbers are all accurate. And again, they came from the Federal Reserve, which certainly has not been a friend to Donald Trump.
No, but I mean, you know, the thing about Canada is, you know, I went up there. I've been up there a number of times, and you know the people are friendly and all that stuff. But they have essentially a European style economy. They have a collectivist economy. Canadians who can come to the U.S. for medical care. You know, I mean, there's a lot of there are a lot of things that although we're on the same continent and we're neighbors, they're vastly different. I would not go so far as to say North and South Korea or something silly like that. But I mean, their economy struggles to generate growth for a few reasons, one of which is the high degree of interventionism that the government has in their private sector.
Yeah, no, I just,
I've been talking. I figure I'd give you a chance to.
Well, it's amazing the difference between two neighboring countries, right, side by side, you know, with economies that are deeply intertwined. And you know, and this is the difference between having good leadership and bad leadership. And, you know, I look at what Trump has done, you know, in his 9 months now. It's just, I find it absolutely amazing. And, you know, the tariffs, no tariffs. I don't understand why you didn't want to go there about the tariffs.
Well, I mean, we would have that much more commerce if we weren't interfering with it. But I mean, here's the thing: again, you know, many of us, and by that I mean the profession of economics, which I'm a part of, many of us looked at the initial numbers and we got very, very scared in April. We've seen nothing like that put on. You know, I'm told it's generating revenue. It seems like it has to generate some revenue. I just feel like that sort of interference, you know, if we knew it was temporary, it would be gone for 2 years and then maybe take them off, that'd be one thing. But, you know, it does raise prices to an extent. It does keep people from trading and make companies make decisions about doing things, you know, otherwise than they have, in different ways than they have been, doing substitutes, that sort of thing. So I, again, as a matter of principle, I'm not in favor of interfering in people's trade. But clearly from the numbers we're seeing, especially GDP, which is the top line number,
right?
It is not destroying our economy by any means.
Well, don't you think it's helping with onshoring a lot of jobs here in the United States, or, you know, bringing back that those jobs that we lost to NAFTA?
Yeah, I mean, that takes a long time. It may contribute to that over time.
Yeah, it's a long game, right? It's not like overnight.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that is not going to happen. It may happen, sure.
Yeah, well, I just see more investment in the United States. I see people, repatriating money that they didn't have here before, and the willingness to manufacture here in the United States, I think that's in the looking down as a long game, not a short game, that it's going to be better for America not to be so dependent on outside sources.
Well, that's very different than most politics and the way politics has gone for the last 40 or 50 years.
It's right.
Looking beyond one's own term, right? Looking to say the changes I'm putting in place may marginally benefit my grandkids, but they'll be great for my great-grandkids. But that's a different kind of thinking, that the incentives of politics in the United States, with our shorter term limits and with this, kind of race to get to the trough and spend money, hasn't seen in a long time. So that is a very positive thing, I would say.
Definite shift.
Yeah, Doc, yep. Let me ask you, I've been thinking about this a lot. As you know, there is a rather robust effort to bring the Russian-Ukrainian war to a conclusion.
Sure.
Ukraine has sort of summarily agreed to the peace deal that's on the table. It looks like Russia is maybe gravitating to it. If, in fact, we could get a conclusion to that war, do you see that having any economic benefit in terms of growth, not only for America, but for the rest of the world?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, one thing that we've seen is that we would get some energy and commodity relief, right? We already have falling oil prices and falling natural gas prices, but they would fall a little bit more because they would lose what's called the risk premium on them. There would be an improved risk sentiment. There would be supply chain normalization in Europe, right? Because right now, a stabilizing of the Black Sea would probably lower costs on certain grains, fertilizers, that sort of thing. And we could either stop spending or move spending away from the kind of things that are being done right now in the defense complex. Although I do think, and this is less the economist than the ex-military guy, I do think that a lot of research on drones is going to be done over the next few years, because we've seen them used so much in Ukraine and Russia that I think there's some catching up to do. But I mean, in Europe, a lot of money has been put towards defense spending, that sort of thing. That could be reallocated. So I think that when you have something going on like the Russia-Ukraine war or something like that, you have spending gets completely reallocated to other areas, and to the extent that either that spending declines or gets redeployed back towards more productive areas, it's good for everyone. It's better for everyone. It'd be a great thing to do.
We've seen locally here in the state where several of the television stations, which are affiliated with national broadcasting companies, which are no friend of President Trump, have done stories about the fact that gas prices are down to a four-year low, basically the lowest they've been since Trump really came into office. Trump was leaving office, forgive me. So we're seeing that actually happen. If that trend continues, and it looks like it's going to, we will start to see the cost of goods come down, I think, because the trucking costs, which we truck in most of our goods here, the trucking costs are going to come down because the price of gas and diesel are coming down relatively dramatically compared to what they were just 2 years ago when they were $5, $6, $7 a gallon, and now they're below $3 a gallon. I saw a place in Scarborough, not far from where we had dinner at DeMillo's, as we were out there last week or the week before, and it was $2.49 a gallon. When Trump left office, according to AAA, it was $2.36 a gallon nationwide. So those are numbers that are very helpful to the economy. It puts more money into people's pockets because they're not spending so much to travel. It certainly brings down the cost of trucking goods in. If that trend continues and we get closer to a $2 a gallon or maybe even below that, which I know is what they're targeting, what do you believe that will do long term for the economy?
I mean, you know, fuel prices are a part of everything we do. To the extent that anything needs to be brought anywhere, whether it's around the corner or across the country, those prices are part of it. And, you know, it's not just gasoline. It's also, you know, motor oil. It's all of the petroleum complex factors into those prices. So certainly, if those can be hammered down a bit more, it would be a great thing for everyone. I mean, you know, the effect is not only lowering prices, it's also that when those funds that we, you know, those consumer funds are allocated elsewhere, it means more spending, it means more savings, it means everything else that's there that we want consumers to do to keep the economic ship, you know, sailing. So it would be a great thing. I've really liked what I've seen in that regard, and you know, I certainly think that some more would be would it's always welcome. Let's just say that if we could get under, you know, if we could get down to like $1.25 now, regular, I mean, that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, you know, that it's possible. The only issue is that we there's a natural stop on how far oil and gas can go, because if we want it. Large firms have to be profitable. So if it goes below a level where they're profiting, they'll naturally cut back on their operations. They'll push the price back up. But we can get a lot lower than we are right now, I think.
Yeah, historically, I think OPEC has said they've got to be at $35 a barrel in order for them to make money. And if that number, to go to $1.25, which impacts the world economy, obviously, you're probably going to see oil below $35 a barrel. So OPEC would cut back. But if America continues to be robust, according to stats I've seen, American gas production has grown 20% in the last 11 months. Yeah. If that continues, and I believe that it can, we seem to have an abundant supply and a president who wants it to happen. You know, maybe they have to change their thinking on things.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, I mean, I don't live to keep OPEC in business, right? So I mean, let them figure out. And by the way, a lot of those in other countries, a lot of those big oil companies are government subsidized and government owned anyway. Let them figure out how to lower their price. That's not my job. So I mean, to the extent that we can produce it here, or that we may have relationships with favored nations that will provide, you know, oil and gas to us, you know, I think we should just go just absolutely full speed. Trying to get those prices down anywhere we can, anywhere you can reduce prices, especially after the horrific inflation we had from 2021 to you know, early 2023, is welcome. Get those prices down as much as you can. Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, no, I'm with that. That was a great thing Sarah Palin said. Drill, baby, drill, and she was absolutely right. We have an abundance of fossil fuels here. And God put them in the ground for us to use them. He knew we were going to, and he put them in the ground for us to use them.
Sure did. He sure did. Sure. You know, trucking companies, you know, are always adding on surcharges because of the cost of fuel. That's going to cease to be. And what's that going to do? That's going to transmit into lower prices all across the board, you know. So I think, you know, the idea to try and get away from fossil fuels when we don't have a practical alternative is absolutely foolish. And, it, you know, the ideology just, you know, it's not there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just not. We can't do it yet. And we do have the abundance, so let's use it. And it's... And there's all kinds of means that have been put into place for the people that worry about the pollution from the fossil fuels.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that the idea of moving away from what we know into an uncertain future with nothing that even begins
there you go. Yeah.
For that level of productivity is just, I mean, it's lunacy.
It's foolish.
It's wishful thinking of a most pernicious sort. And the ironic thing is that a lot of the people who, not all, but a lot of the people who harbor those sorts of ideological biases, they're perfectly able to afford, you know, the prices that go up when these things change.
Yeah.
It's people who are dragged along ideologically, the working poor, the middle class, they get destroyed by these sorts of things. So, I mean, I saw it a few years ago in a different form in Sri Lanka, and that became my blueprint for what a Green New Deal would look like. So, yeah, I mean, it's my job to fight that stuff.
Well, we just need to get away from the nonsense, because the working man cannot afford to be experimented with. You know, those paychecks, people work, they live week to week, and, you know, and it's getting to a point where they're not getting through the week now because of all these added costs, because of energy costs. You know, it's just, to me, I just don't get it. They sit there and act like they're trying to protect the working man, and they're all, when all they're doing is just like using and abusing them. It's like, how much money can we take out of their pocket and you know, just advance our stupidity? And, you know, I'm for things that might be practical as energy resources, alternatives. But, my God, we don't have one that makes sense and that we can afford. And so let's just stick with what we know works. And if we find something else along the way, fine. But don't experiment with everyone's pocketbooks, which is what they've been doing to us here in Maine and across the country.
Yep, absolutely. Huge stressor on working class wallets and budgets.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's no question that that's true. I mean, and you know, it's really, and it's not surprising, of course, because this is the American political animal. But people who never said a peep when, you know, eggs were so expensive under Biden, gas at $6, I pay, Didi and I, and the condo that we're selling, we use K1. Under Biden, we paid over $8 a gallon. Jeez. I had never paid more than $3.39 a gallon ever until Joe Biden became president. You know, I've joked about it, and it's true. It is coincidence, I know, but I never had a gray hair until Joe Biden became president. I was very lucky. I never did. I do have some gray hair now, but
you're getting gray on us.
Yeah, I'm starting to get gray on us, gentlemen. I have grown gray.
Time for a little bit of Grecian formula for you.
Yeah, right? No, I don't think so. I don't do that kind of stuff. Yeah,
right. All my hair was long gone before Biden came in. Yeah. So I can't blame him for that.
So it's a joke. Obviously, it was a natural occurrence, but it did happen when Joe became president. But my point was, all these people were silent as these things were happening. Yeah. When inflation went to 9.1%, they said we were whining, and which is ridiculous stuff. Reagan called it the misery index. And and now with Trump in office and things are better, they're whining because they haven't come down fast enough. But they kept their mouths shut when their boy was in office. It's just so weird. They have
ideologues.
They have no consistency. Yeah, sure. They have no conscience. It's just so crazy to me. It really is.
Yeah. It looks to me like they started searching in the dictionary in the summer of 2022. You know, about a month ago, came across the word affordability.
Oh, yeah. You see that, huh? That's the whole thing.
It's been relevant for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they want to come up with a new tax plan. They want to do this, right? But when it was their policies, the things that they did that have caused this pain to the average person here in the United States of America.
Yeah.
And Maine in particular. I mean, property taxes through the roof, absolutely through the roof.
But don't worry, David. The Senate President, Mattie Daughtry, she had an epiphany when she was out walking her dog. Peter, she did a video out walking her dog in the neighborhood. And she said, you know, I hear consistently from people they're concerned about high property taxes. And so we've established a select blue ribbon community of the committee of the legislature to analyze why property taxes are so high. I can save them the money they'll waste and the pastry and coffee that they'll buy. It's because you have nut jobs spending more money than we can afford. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, when has a blue ribbon, you know, commission or whatever solved anything? I mean, it's just a way of
placating,
the deterrent. Yeah, I mean,
that's all it is.
It's just a pantomime. I don't. The minute I hear something like that, the minute I hear they know exactly what the issue is, this is just a square dance in the meantime. So, yeah, I don't have a lot of respect for those sorts of bureaucratic, sideshows. It's just ridiculous.
It's just political fodder. And, you know, it makes me sick to my stomach that when they open up their mouth and say, oh, you know, this is such a problem. Well, guess what? Look in the mirror. You caused this problem. You caused the issues that we're having by making stupid decisions that have negatively affected everyone in our state and in our country. You people did it, and now we're going to fix it, bottom line.
You guys know the song. Yep. It's a marvelous night for a moon dance.
Marvelous night.
For I call it a marvelous night for a moon bat dance.
Moon bat dance. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's just so crazy. The things they say, and they think that we're here in Maine in particular, they think that we're stupid. And
that's right.
So
we need
a dictatorship. We need a tyrannical government. We need a monarchy. I'll give you a good example, and this is economic, even though people will say it's not. But a well-educated workforce is part of a strong economy. They went to a social-emotional learning as the pretense of education in the state of Maine under Governor Mills and Commissioner of Education Pender Macon. The results have been horrific. Fourth graders in the state of Maine are the lowest in the country reading with comprehension and doing math with proficiency. That came on the heels of 2 years ago. Hmm. Sixth graders having the worst recorded reading with comprehension scores in Maine recorded history. Our schools are ranked 43rd in the country. They were 32nd, which was too low when she took office. So they announced recently that they've recognized that this hasn't worked. They didn't say those words.
Duh.
And they are going to go back to a basics foundation for education. And it's because Janet Mills, who is now governor, is running against Susan Collins for the United States Senate. And they're scared to death. People are, you know, you can mess with a lot of things, but when you start messing with parents' kids, they start to get upset.
Yes, yes, that definitely gets one's attention. So,
it's all crazy.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It's all crazy, Peter. You know what? We wish you were back up here, though. We had a lot of fun with you. You got to come back up.
I think we're going to have to do that. Yeah. Let me start looking at the calendar for 2026, and maybe we can do a couple next year.
Yeah, that would be great.
Get back up.
I'm getting
AIR was very happy with it too. So,
good.
We'd love to do that.
Wow, AIR was happy. We didn't even know they knew we exist.
Yeah,
yay!
We're on the board, right?
Well, they know I exist, and they know that I do things because I have to tell them. So,
well, excuse me, I had a moment there on the radio, and you just ruined it for me. Thank you. Now I'm getting my hip done, replaced on the 16th. So next year I'll be ready to rumble. I won't be hobbling around as I was the night you were here. So,
gosh. That's a big deal, but I have a feeling that I have some friends who've had knees and hips done, and they've said that, you know, the short-term, hassle was well worth the years afterwards that they felt much better. So, the thing to do.
Well, I don't know. I had an hour-long call yesterday with a very, very nice lady from the hospital about my pre-op stuff, and some of the things she told me that I can't do made me wonder if I should skip it. I can't shower on. I can't do this. I can't. I'm like,
oh yeah, it's a total.
Those are part of my identity. Being clean is part of my identity. I'm a germaphobe. Yeah. I'm a germaphobe.
You are. You are, no doubt.
I use more Purell than anybody in this country. Yeah. I promise you.
You might have Purell poisoning. I mean,
I do. Hey, we have got to run. It's always great to have you on. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me. Have a great week.
You got it. We'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Medicare's annual enrollment period is right now. Did you receive a premium increase, reduction, or loss of benefits, or do you have questions about your plan? Casco Bay Associates can help. Call 207-200-8304.
At Community Pharmacy, we can provide all your durable medical equipment needs. We can also provide all your incontinence needs as well as your hospice care needs discreetly and delivered right to your door. Go to communityrx.com to find out more.
Hi, I'm David Jones, and I'm running to be your next governor. Maine has been my family's home for nearly three decades. I've invested my life here in Maine, built companies from the ground up, revitalized small towns, and created real jobs for Maine people. I'm not a politician. I'm not a lobbyist or a lawyer. I'm a businessman, an outsider, who's seen firsthand how high taxes, suffocating regulations, and radical liberal policies are crushing our state. Maine's at a tipping point. Our schools are failing. Hospitals are closing their doors, and hardworking small business owners are calling it quits. Enough is enough. It's time for bold leadership to cut the waste, audit every dollar, and put Maine back on the path to prosperity. Together, we'll rebuild our economy, strengthen our communities, and secure a brighter future for every family. I'm David Jones, and I'm running for governor in 2026 because Maine deserves to have true leadership. Join me. Let's make Maine great again. Visit Jones2026.com to learn more and get involved.
Paid for and authorized by David Jones for governor. Red City Ale House, 8 Main Street in Wyndham, is your favorite neighborhood pub. Dee Dee and I have never had a bad meal there, and I promise you won't either. The best drinks in town. Find out more at redcityalehouse.com. This Channel 8 newscast is brought to you by Dirigo Public Affairs. They take pride in making sure they create a customized strategy to meet their clients' unique needs. Find out more at DirigoPublicAffairs.com.